Let's see what happens here. Ooh, that is not good. Oh my god.
Good lord, I can't roll for shit.
Woo, three. I think that's good.
But remember, we're really good at making games harder than they need to be.
Hello, and welcome to House Rules, the podcast that explores all things rules-related with your favorite tabletop games. Questions, clarifications, best, worst, and some that just need a tweak. So join us as we explore the House Rules.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of House Rules, a proud member of the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast network. I am Commander Scott. Joining me today, I have Jeremiah Houston and the 50% slightly sloshed Jamies of the Jamies. I know, I came up with that one on the spot. And
which one it is?
That's really good.
So full disclaimer, my wife went out with a girlfriend tonight to have margaritas and came back in time, just in time for the podcast.
And that is completely fine. There is nothing wrong with that at all.
So we don't know what's going to happen tonight. Yeah, we shall see.
So I got the Jamies with us. We've got Houston. We've got Jeremiah. Everyone, how are we doing today?
Good, but not as good as my wife.
I am very envious of your wife right now.
And I'm getting put in my place because my son just wanted to know if he could look up stories from the Bible.
Wow.
Perspective on my life right now.
You come home, you've had a few margaritas, you're feeling good, completely safe. You know, there was a DD and everything. Everything was done completely responsibly.
And now she's ready to throw games out.
And your son walks up to you and goes, "Mommy, can I look up tales and stories from the Bible?" Why are you giggling, Mommy? Have you been partaking of the devil's drink, Mommy?
This is so accurate.
Anyway.
Well, in case you ask. I don't know if you did.
Anyway, so today we are discussing, and this came up, I think, on a previous episode, I'm not sure, but we are discussing rules in role-playing games that we have thrown out, you know, and this is something with role-playing games. You're the game master, you're running your game, you can, And I don't know if this is still something they put in games, but I know, you know, back in the late 80s and stuff, they would actually put this in games, that it was, like, if there's a rule you don't like, don't use it. You know, it's whatever. You do whatever you want, man. It's the Wild West. It's however you want to tell your story, however you want to run your game. So there have been game, you know, rules in games that were just like, yeah, that just seems wonky to me, or I don't understand it, and we're just going to throw it out. So that's what we're talking about today. And I'll be honest, I don't know where or how to start. So anybody got a starting place for us?
I do, but it's completely from left field.
That's fine.
So the archaic word for today is, Jamie, I hope you are not feeling crapulous, which means to feel ill from overindulgence.
Crapulous?
I feel crapulous right now.
Anti-crapulous, okay.
Yeah, is that the opposite? If I say anti-crapulous, is that the opposite of crapulous?
That means if you're anti-crapulous, that means you would feel bad, feel ill from the overindulgence. Do you feel ill at the moment?
No, I feel really nice.
Okay, then you are definitely not feeling crapulous.
Well, actually, I have to say I'm a bit impressed. I love it when I learn new words. You know, I mean, I think it's a great thing. And crapulous actually sounds like a made-up, I know they're all made-up words, but it sounds like a non-word, like just some, yeah, it sounds like it, but it's a word.
Like, so is this a new thing, right? This is Houston's archaic word corner?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, Scott put the challenge forth the last podcast. So.
I did?
Yes.
I don't remember this.
Because what word did I throw out? The weird word. Oh God, I don't even remember. We'll have to listen to the prior episode.
I didn't realize I did that.
You did. So I looked up crapulous and they had cannonade and I'm like, no, that's too easy. Everybody would know that one.
Cannonade, yeah.
So I went to I'm like, ooh, crapulous. There we go.
So for me, we throw out all the movement rules.
Hang on, I'm still on crapulous. Hang on, I'm not ready to go to role playing.
We're going down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, we are, because I'm not the Houston's done dangled a carrot in front of me.
My bad.
Yeah, sorry. Give me just a second here. So that there's two definitions that I have found for crapulous. One is marked by intemperance, especially in eating or drinking from alcohol, and the other one is sick from excess indulgence in liquor. But yeah, so you could use the word crapulous when talking about somebody who is inebriated from alcohol, but they're not sick from it. You can still use it, I think. Now, it's obvious if they're sick from excessive indulgence in liquor, then yes, it absolutely applies. But if they're just inebriated or buzzed, then it can be applied, right? I'm thinking, no? Just me? Am I getting too detailed on this that no one else needs to know the details? I can't help myself.
I'm still thinking about movement rules.
I swear. Okay, fine. Let's go with Jeremiah's throwing out of movement rules in games. Are you talking specific role-playing games or like all? Like you just don't like movement rules at all, period?
I've mentioned this before, but way back when, once upon a time, playing second edition Dungeons & Dragons or AD&D, I was playing a dwarf and we were running into a fight, and by the time my stumpy little legs got me there, the fight was over. So I'm not a big fan of movement rules, especially when they're someone's actually measuring it and making sure you adhere to it.
Jeremiah will not like my campaign.
Oh. are you going to be a movement rule Nazi?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, the other aspect of that is some of the, like, Marvel superheroes, you move by areas, which was kind of a vague form of measurement. And I don't really like that either. I like more theater of the mind. If the players can explain it and make it sound feasible, we just let it happen. Now, obviously, you're not going to run around the city block and punch the guy unless you have some kind of super speed, but, I mean, within reason.
Yeah, Quicksilver could do it.
Very easily. He could run around the block several times before he did it.
Exactly. Yeah, so.
But to the best of my knowledge, none of you have ever played speedsters.
We have not. I have never played a speedster, and that is interesting to me. Because I kind of like the Flash in DC. Mm-hmm. Well, when he's not being used to just do the damn Centerpoint storyline over and over and over again, when you actually get into his other storylines and some of the really cool stuff he's done, and not just use him for universe resetting Centerpoint storyline. Flashpoint. That's it. Yep. Centerpoint. Yes, Flashpoint stuff.
Because it's one of his best stories that he's had. But
I disagree that it is one of the best stories that he's had.
Which is why it gets retold over and over and over and over. Yes.
There's other good stories. But anyway, that's a topic for a different podcast. One of my favorite stories in the comics with Quicksilver. Actually, I have two really fun moments with Quicksilver in the comics. One is, I forget, he was with the Avengers at one point. I forget who they were fighting. But, like, Hawkeye had some arrows that was, like, being really effective against it. So the villain, of course, took out Hawkeye because, you know, he's a threat. And so Quicksilver runs over and picks up the quiver and the bow from Hawkeye's unconscious form. And, of course, the villain is taunting him, like, do you think, you know, you're any good? Like, do you think you can possibly replace Hawkeye? Because he's got the marksmanship and everything. You know, he's the person. And Quicksilver, of course, looks up at him, Piotre. He looks up at him and he's like, well, yes, but you forget. What I lack in quality, you know, I make up in quantity.
And fires the whole quiver.
He just empties the quiver, just fires everything. But if you look at the Marvel superhero stats, like, Quicksilver is almost as accurate with that bow as Hawkeye is. Because his agility is so high. Yeah.
Good agility, but he's got the skills to back it up.
He's got the skills. And that's one of the few things when it comes to Marvel superheroes that I think gets left on the table quite a bit, is everybody looks at the powers and abilities. The skills, I think, get overlooked. They take a back seat.
They do. They're not as powerful or as awesome in game effect as the powers are.
Exactly. But anyway.
So movement rules. Not a big fan of micromanaging movement.
Well, the problem with movement, I mean, so if you look at AD&D 2nd Edition, which I'm not, I mean, I've played it and stuff. I've never really ran AD&D 2nd Edition, so I'm not very well versed on the movement rules for that. I know the movement rules for 4th Edition were very stringent, but they were also meant to be used with miniatures on a map because the D&D 4th Edition is a actually decent miniatures game.
It is.
Yep.
I do kind of like the areas aspect of movement rules with Marvel superheroes and stuff. But one that...
The area descriptors, but I got rid of the maps early on.
Yes, yes, get rid of the maps. Anytime you start making that transition, I have found very few role-playing games that work very well. Like, if you get rid of the maps and that system, there's very few movement rules that don't need to be modified. Like, it's like the movement is either very fluid in theater of the mind, or it's very map oriented. Like, there's very few that I found that are like a kind of a hybrid, you know, that can do both.
Yep, I agree. And like you said, 4th edition, if you try to take the maps away and the movement away, you break the game a little bit.
You do. Yep. It doesn't work as much. It doesn't work as well.
Because you have a lot of abilities that are very map and movement dependent.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of movement and stuff, what was that?
That's it.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you. Sorry.
You don't have to whisper. You can speak.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm trying to.
It's just us and our three listeners, so we're good.
It's all right. It's all good.
I have something to say, but I don't think now's the time. When you get done with this conversation, I have something to say.
Well, no. We can change into the next one.
No, but you're finishing the story.
Wrap it up, Scott.
One thing I do want to say when it comes to movement rules real quick is there's a couple of games. I think Star Trek Adventures is one of them. I forget what the other one is. It might be Star Wars. We were actually talking about this before the show started. Star Wars, the Fantasy Flight Star Wars, Edge of the Empire, Age of Rebellion, Force, and Destiny, you know, the current ones, where it uses like a range band.
Yes.
You know, like you have point blank, then range one, range two, and then long range. You have point blank, short, medium, long, that type of thing, right?
Even the old Western Games D6 use that for vehicle combat.
Yes, yes. So it doesn't call out specific distances. Like, oh, if you're 0 to 30 meters, blah blah blah. If you're, it just says, look, if you're at point blank range, you know, if you're this, you're at point blank range. If you're this, you're kind of a medium range, and it's going to take you an action to, like, you know, go from long range to medium range to close the distance or to increase the distance. Like, if you want to change that range band, you have to spend actions and stuff to physically get from one area to another, and it leaves it kind of very loose. I like the range band system. And personally, I think in any game, regardless, if you're not using a map, if you're not using miniatures on a map with a grid system where the actual footage, the number of feet, is actually coming into play, no matter what the movement system is, I think you could throw it out for this loose of a system. Just do it in range bands, right?
I like that better.
I think so.
Cypher system, right, uses a range band.
They do? I haven't read the Cypher system, so I don't know.
Yep.
I've heard about it because I've heard there's this really great campaign that's being written in the Cypher system, but I haven't had a chance to play it yet, so. Anyway, so.
Okay. So, I think I'm changing the subject, but not sure.
Okay.
But I'm going to read you a little snippet from a campaign from Simborum, because that's the only game I know right now.
All right.
And I'm paraphrasing slightly. But this is talking about adventure locations in this campaign. It says the following places and establishments and its surrounding area may be relevant when playing this campaign. The Game Master is, of course, free to add more locations and must, as always, be ready to improvise when players act in unexpected ways, which should be expected. And I like that about the Simborum system because it does, in fact, often talk about how characters are not going to do what you think they should, in fact, do. And it'll lay out, like in some of the campaigns, it'll lay out, it's like, okay, well, these are the things that we've prepared in this campaign. But you should just know your characters are probably going to do some unexpected things and you kind of need to be ready for it because, you know, you may need help getting them here. You may need to redirect them, or you may be willing to just go a totally different way because they're going to do something that you don't want them to do.
I love that Simbarum actually says, you know, your characters are going to do the unexpected. You should totally expect this, which is not wrong.
Exactly.
It's funny. Exactly. It's funny. I do like the fact that Simbarum just kind of uses like a location like as its own thing. Like everybody's in the location. Everybody can act. They can do whatever they pretty much want in the location. We don't really have to get bogged down in the minutia of how many feet they are away from everything, which is one of the things that AD&D 2nd Edition did, because like Jeremiah was saying with the movement rules for dwarves, which were really stumpy, and it would take them forever to cover any kind of distance.
Right. Now, Fate does something similar with their areas and regions. Like, things all happen in the same area. If you leave the area, it can actually change the scene.
Okay. I have to say I'm a bit confused by this.
Well, okay, let's say everything's happening in a warehouse, right?
Yeah.
That is the scene. Now, the warehouse can include a sub-basement, an office, a parking lot right in front. But at some point, let's say your character needs to go leave the warehouse to go question somebody, right?
Like during a scene.
During a scene, you would remove yourself from that scene.
Yeah, if you leave the warehouse, yeah.
Right. And that's actually, then your character can't really influence a scene anymore until the scene's complete.
Hmm.
See,
and there's... Go ahead.
Well, and I get that. That makes sense. Like, you know, Hey, our scene right now, we're having, you know, you all are trying to, you know, you're trying to infiltrate the enemy lair, which is inside, you know, an abandoned warehouse downtown and everything, and you're either trying to sneak past the guards or what have you, or you're having to fight through the guards to get to, you know, the main office or whatever. But if somebody says, hey, I have an idea, I'm leaving the warehouse.
Yep.
Okay. Then you've got the thing of like, okay, you're not there. You've removed yourself from the situation. So we're going to go ahead and continue with everybody else. But what if they want to make an end run around and try to climb into one of the other windows? Are you still...
That's what you would do. You'd be creating... Well, this is back to the whole aspect thing, right?
Yeah.
You'd be creating an aspect to put yourself back into it later, but you've removed yourself from the scene then.
Huh.
And you're kind of at the mercy at that point of yourself narratively or the game master narratively of when you get reinserted, depending on how you handle the aspect.
Yeah.
But don't you need to tell the game master what you want to do?
Yeah, you tell the intentions. But the point they do that is so that you're not trying to run parallel scenes.
Mm.
Oh.
You can, I'm assuming, if it's narratively pertinent. But for the most part, all that does is distract away from the main action.
Well...
This goes back to the same problem. Ooh, another thing we threw out was Shadowrun, Deckers and Rickers.
What the hell are Deckers and Rickers?
Riggers.
So Riggers?
Rigger. Like you when rig you're something. Dead? No. Not rigor mortis.
careful. He's an elf.
But what you in that game, you would have a whole bunch of guys making a run, right? Against the corp or corporation or whatever on a mission.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And you'd have a cyber guy, a Decker, who would go on the web, basically, and he would be doing stuff over there to disable security and intrusion countermeasures. Or you'd have the rigger who would plug himself into vehicles and he could control vehicles either remotely or through neural interface. But when you did that, there was a whole separate rule system for those characters that put them in a whole different setting.
My brain hurts. What?
Basically the same thing. You'd be running parallel scenes.
Oh, but that sometimes works.
Yeah. It does, but it was really hard to keep the flow of the game because, okay, we have to go cut to the Decker who's trying to hack the system and his...
And this is one of those times whenever, as a game master, you actually do the theater of the mind as, okay, cutscene, move over here, okay, cutscene, move back.
But then you got four or five people sitting around a table waiting for this guy to do whatever he's doing in the system, where I liked if a character, it would be a one-on-one session, game master, one player, and you play a Decker or a Rigger.
What game system are we playing again?
The Shadowrun.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Or you would just have to hand wave it in the background, which wasn't doing justice to that character.
That sounds sad.
Personally, I only really like running parallel scenes. Well, mm-hmm. So first of all, I really only like running parallel scenes when you have a somewhat even split of the players.
Correct. Otherwise, yeah. Somebody's sitting out and...
Exactly. Two and two, 3 and 3, blah, 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 blah. But you can run a parallel scene with 1 and 5, let's say, if it's one person doing their thing, as long as two factors. One, you kind of keep the one person to just like one or two actions, so you don't like spend a lot of time.
Keep it short.
Or two, whatever is happening, and this is where the feel of the game master, the feel of the table comes into play. If whatever is happening to that one person, if the other players are engaged as spectators,
yes,
you can still keep it going a little bit. Like if they're like, oh shit, what's going on? Dude, you got to do this. You got to do that. Like they're engaged still, then you can carry it on a little bit longer.
But like you said, you got to read the table and kind of know how the group plays.
You got to read the table. Yeah. And see how.
So that's one thing that another rule that I tended to have to skirt or throw out. Was these separate settings for certain characters. And we would do that a lot by encouraging people to not play those in a group setting.
But are we saying as a whole, maybe Drunk Jamie doesn't know, but are we saying that like it's just really hard for people to give a shit about what other people are doing when it's not their person doing stuff, the things, the fun?
Well, I think about the gaming group in Alabama we played with where you'd have 30 minutes between actions.
Yeah, but, you know, sometimes I stayed, I don't know the word.
Engaged.
That's it. The whole time. Even though, like, my character wasn't there and there was a lot of time. But then there's times, okay, so that's what you're saying. That's the read the table. Yeah. That's what that means.
Yeah.
If everybody's engaged and it doesn't matter that you're doing a split screen, but if people are losing engagement, correct. Is that a word?
Correct.
Oh, that's good.
It is now.
then I don't remember what I was saying.
Sorry.
But I'm sure it makes sense.
It does. Makes perfect sense. perfect. It does. So we talked about a lot of movement rules and stuff, and I would have to say movement rules for rules that we throw out of a game, movement rules have to be at the top of that list because they're very subjective on how you're playing your game and such and everything. And rules that would split people off from another one, like the Shadowrun, I'm going to call it slicing rules because that's the Star Wars term, and I know it. and everything. Yeah, so any rules that would split your party like into a sub-compartment, like you've got your one guy who's doing his own little thing and everything, for those, you've got to read the table and find a way to make it objective. But, okay, so outside of those, so we've got movement rules, that's there. Anything else in a role playing game that we either have thrown out or that we've experienced in a game that we think was unnecessary, like not that we have thrown out, but hey, I played this game and I think we could have got rid of this a little bit.
Some of the initial rules. Go ahead, Houston. I'm sorry.
Probably the second biggest after movement is encumbrance rations, food.
Yep.
I don't think we've ever paid attention to
that. We handle that a lot. We just don't worry about it. Now, I have made you all not take the dragon horde with you because you couldn't physically carry it.
Yeah, there's a lot of times when encumbrance and food kind of only really comes into play when it's dramatically appropriate.
Now I will say there was one time in the army that I had a guy who was a self-proclaimed gearmonger.
Yes.
Who said that he could carry all this stuff with him every time. So we sat down one evening instead of playing and made out a gear list and how much everything should weigh, and then went around my buddy's house and found all the appropriate items that we could make equal weight and size, and then had him wear that for the rest of the evening.
Now, didn't he even go so far as to have you define how much a gold coin weighed?
Yes, because that was an important aspect to do this, because we had to determine the actual weight of a gold coin.
Because you had to know how much weight his money would add to his pack.
Yes, and by the time the night was over, he conceded that it was not feasible for him to carry everything on his list.
That's funny.
But,
that's hilarious.
Well, but if I recall the story correctly, even though he conceded that everything on his list he couldn't have, he did get it down to the most economical one-man lift he could get.
Absolutely. Yes, he did. That was probably a little bit too geeky for trying to define a rule set, but yes.
Hey, you know what? What was the guy's name? I can't remember the guy's name right now.
I can't remember who it was either,
entirely honest. Anyway, whoever this person is, my hat is off to him for going to these lengths. And he is forever in the RPG Story Hall of Fame. Because I have told this story before to other people.
Yes. But of course, so that's another one. I agree with Houston about the encumbrance. We usually hand wave the encumbrance and food and rations.
Yeah,
I can't think of any...
Well, okay, there is one setting I made people keep track of food and water, and that was Dark Sun.
But that's a different setting. That's setting appropriate.
Yeah.
Appropriate. Did I say that word right?
You did. Yes. Beautifully.
So that's the one setting I have made people keep track of that part.
Well, that's part of the mystique of Dark Sun.
Well.
Then initiative.
Oh, God.
There are several games that have some cumbersome initiatives that I've reworked or tweaked or streamlined. And the one that I get accused of using all the time is I will just use team initiative, even if a game doesn't typically allow it.
Personally, I like team initiative.
That's not an accusation. You do actually do that. Oh, it's a statement of the fact.
I like team initiative. I use it.
A
lot of times I use it to streamline the combat to make it go faster instead of having to worry about Thug 1, 2, 3 goes, Jamie goes, Thug 6 goes, and Houston goes.
Well, but this is one thing that I like about certain games, like we were talking about 7C here recently.
Yeah.
So 7C does not categorize the antagonists, the villains, in just a villain category, right? Like they have kind of a hybrid. So instead of having like an initiative for all the villains and an initiative for the heroes, they don't have that. And they don't really have like an initiative for like villain 1, villain 2, villain 3, hero 1, hero 2, hero 3, like each individual character. They categorize their villains, which is like you have the unnamed henchmen, which are your
goon squads
or brute squads is what they call them. And then you've got the lieutenants, which are not the main villain, but they're the direct underlings that at least deserve, they're the ones in command of the brute squads that deserve a name. And then you've got the overall villain, which is on the kind of the same level as the hero. So you could divvy those up. Like you could have brute squad, hero, you know, and then lieutenant, and then villain. You know, you could mix it up a little bit without doing each individual character, which I think is a good way to do things.
It's a good way to do it. Oh, and to go back and tag on to Houston's ammo. I very rarely make people track ammo. Mm-hmm. And unless I have somebody who wants to play a D&D wizard, a detailed wizard campaign, I usually hand wave spell components.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Except for the 1,000 GP worth of diamond dust for stone skin. They have to go find that.
You absolutely made me keep track of every single arrow I ever shot for my first character.
Just because you fired 90 before I made you start keeping count.
That's not the point. That is not the point.
It's like, how many have you shot? Oh, 4 or 5. You've killed 26 people. I got a couple with one shot.
I love it.
So yeah, spell components is another one that I'm not... Unless someone's playing a solo wizard campaign, I don't really delve into too much.
Oh.
But you, yeah, because that's just in the same out of, like, between play.
Yeah, you're keeping it stocked. You know what you have. You're a responsible character. Yes.
Right.
You're not going to show up without your back guano.
Right.
Which makes... And so here's also another thing. That makes for interesting side quests. Like, hey,
sometimes I do.
Yeah, hey, what are we doing? We just, you know, we just recovered the diamond statue of Akatar. What are we doing next? I need more bat shit, guys. My bat guano is damn near low. I got to go to this cave. We're gonna have to, you know, I need you to get some nets and stuff because I need to scrape some bat guano off the walls of this cave.
Funny, if you don't mind. Funny you mention that, because Ars Magica makes gathering components part of the story.
Yeah, if you're playing a mage heavy with components and stuff, yeah, it really should be.
Like sometimes your coven has certain types of vim or magic you have to go collect at certain times in a certain situation. So you might be doing this big giant grand campaign, but only once every 6 years. You have to go collect dew off this weather vane to collect a certain type of magic. It can only be done on this day at this time. Guys, I know that the prince has been kidnapped, but we got to do this. We got to wait 6 years.
That would suck.
That's interesting. But see, that adds flair. That adds...
It does.
You know, that's... And it's still story-driven.
Yep.
Right? It's still...
And it's an important source of magical power and influence for your characters and setting. So... You really have to think, do I want to forego this for 6 years to do this action now, or can we stall for a couple hours? Game time.
Right.
I say we wait 6 years, but that's just me.
Hey, and that's, yeah, there you go, see?
But then you can't do that spell.
Yep, exactly.
Yes, but how often are you going to need to be able to turn somebody's hair purple on a dime? I'm just saying.
I mean, I don't know. I've got a beauty appointment on Friday, and yeah, we've got to make this happen. If not, she's not going to let me back in.
It's just a rave, dude. I mean, it's not that big a deal if you miss the rave because you don't have purple hair. I mean, I know all your friends are going to be there, and it's, you know, it's important, and it's going to ruin your life if you don't, but you can just spend a quiet evening at home with your mom and dad, all right? I'm just saying. You don't need the purple hair.
We can save the prince and forget about the weather.
Right? I don't know what he's trying to say about my hair, but I like my purple hair. And it's going to be more purple the next time I go to the hair purple person.
The hair purple person.
I love it.
Hold on, I'm looking up the archaic word for hair purple person.
Hair purple person.
Did you know that Scott's the chancellor of all things purple?
No, that is not true. I am the supreme chancellor of all things purple.
He is. I don't know why he chose that. But I like it.
I did.
You've been that for a long time.
I chose that years ago as my title. I am the Supreme Chancellor of all things purple.
The Supreme Chancellor of all things purple.
Ooh. And another one I know a lot of people have thrown out is when the Palladium system is the SDC-MDC conversion.
What the fuck is that?
Actually, I think they just throw out the Palladium system.
No. No. No, hang on. No. You can't throw out the Palladium system. Does it have its flaws? Yes. But it's a staple. I'm sorry, but you've got D&D, you know, when it comes to AD&D 2nd edition, you've got Palladium, you've got D6, you've got Marvel Superheroes, you've got GURPS, you've got Shadowrun, and there's one more that I'm forgetting about right now. But
you do realize that everything you've mentioned came out of the 80s and 90s.
Those
right?
are the core. Yes. Yes. Because those are the core. That is the crux of everything. That is the foundation that everything today owes its allegiance to.
So what is Palladium? Listeners, I would love to whisper to you and tell you what the shit means, but I don't know it yet.
So in the Rift system specifically for Palladium, you have structural damage capacity, which is how much damage somebody can take or something can take, right?
Is that DSC?
Well,
SDC.
Well, it's how much personnel and lower level vehicles can take.
Correct. But yeah. In Rifts, they introduced the Mega Damage Capacity, MDC, which it takes a...
Mega Damage Capacity. Rifts is the thing where you go from, like, you're here, but then you're not, like, you're here and you're you, but then a rift happens in the space-time continuum and you're switched away.
So hang on. Wait, back up one. So think of SDC, Structural Damage Capacity, right? Which is kind of the damage capacity of, like, a human being, right? So you've got, let's look at World War II, which is something that everybody kind of has a basis comparison on, okay?
Yep.
So, World War II, you have an M1 Garand, which is firing a 30-06 round at a human being, okay? Yep. You fire a 30-06 round at a human being, it's going to tear a decent-sized hole in a human. It's going to pretty much, it's a fatal hit, yes. Right?
He's saying words like we know what they are.
I know what they are.
I know what they are.
I know what they are.
Okay.
I mentioned. I understood World War II.
Okay. Okay.
What?
Okay, Jamie, I'm gonna simplify it a little more. Okay.
Okay.
This is where it gets more complex.
I love it. Okay.
If the audience isn't aware, my wife is not a historian or gun person.
It's okay. She okay. I'm sorry. Okay. Jamie. So you've got World War II, which you know, right?
Uh-huh.
So you've got a soldier firing a rifle at another soldier.
Okay, makes sense.
Okay. A rifle, right?
A gun.
Shooting a gun at another person. So a gun, the bullet from the gun hits another person. It's going to do a significant amount of damage, right?
Right.
Yes.
So let's say that same soldier is shooting that same rifle, okay, at an aircraft carrier.
That's silly.
Exactly.
Plink.
That's the difference between SDC and MDC.
Correct.
I get it.
But now, think of the big giant gun on the deck of the ship.
So now we compare.
No longer there.
Exactly. No. So now we compare the main guns, the 8-inch guns off of the USS Arizona, which is a battleship, which is meant to engage aircraft carriers and destroyers and other battleships.
8-inch. Diameter, not length of the barrel.
Yes, 8-inch diameter.
I have things to say about that.
So 8 inches. Yes. So the main gun on a battleship shoots at a person and hits the person. Personally,
there is no more person.
There is no more personally. Yeah. Personally, I love the SDC MDC mechanic. I love it. I think it's an awesome mechanic.
It breaks down at personnel level between the two weapons, in my opinion, though. When I pull out the MDC laser pistol that does 1d4 MDC damage, and I shoot it at John Doe, the guy at the store,
yes,
and he takes 400 SDC damage.
Yes. Yes. Because a weaponized laser should be able to vaporize the human body. And yes, the human body can be vaporized. That is scientific fact.
And it is possible, if you have a tough enough person and a weak enough MDC weapon, you could shoot them, they might live.
It would be hard-pressed. If you were at the opposite ends of those,
You get into it when you have an SDC creature that approaches several hundred SDC.
Yes. But even if you get an SDC creature, which is at the high end of the tolerance and resistance, and you get an MDC weapon, which is at the lowest end of the MDC, like if you get those tolerant stack-ups, right, to where, you know, the person gets, can they live? Yes. Are they going to be happy? No. Oh. Are they going to be combat effective? No.
But the point of me bringing this up is I've read several different people in groups who have... Just basically streamlined it into one system.
See,
to do away with the conversion back and forth because they didn't like it.
Yeah, see, to me, that to me is a disjustice to the elegance of the SDC-MDC system.
But I don't think anyone's ever used elegance to describe Palladium's system.
I'm happy. I am doing it right now.
Pretty much the truth.
I don't care. I'm doing it right now. In my opinion, the Palladium SDC-MDC system is a stroke of genius. I love
but
it.
But it's also only strictly necessary in games that have that much of differentiation between weapons, right? I mean, you're talking about...
No. Well, okay, so Star Wars, the D6 system has something comparable, and you've got personnel weaponry, right? Like, I run around, pew-pew you with a blaster.
Pew-pew!
Or I climb inside my ship, and I use the coax quad laser... To shoot the guy on the ground.
Yeah, you're blowing a small crater into the ground, and nothing is left of the person.
Correct.
Okay.
But sorry.
No.
But so Star Wars has that. They have the ship size weaponry, ship scale weaponry, and they also have personal scale weaponry.
Well, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. Drunk Jamie feels like the problem with the Palladium system is the acronym. And the ability to figure out what the hell it means and using the acronym. Because when you explained it in terms of Star Wars, it made infinite more sense.
What about THACO?
I've heard that. It's two-hit actual combat. Wait a minute. How do you spell THACO?
No.
Two-hit.
Hang on.
Wait a minute. Spell it.
It's all right. We're going to let her get through this.
Two-hit. I don't know what ACE stands for.
Sorry.
Combat. Wait, no.
Houston?
What is it?
It's okay.
So should I go now?
Yeah, please.
It's two-hit armor class zero.
Yes. Armor class zero! I knew that! Because if your armor class is zero, you got to figure out what it is to hit, and there's a sliding scale. And Scott taught me a long time ago that you roll and look at your DM to know whether it works.
Yes, that's the way it works. That's the way THACO works.
You roll the dice, and then you look at your DM and you say, did it work?
Did it work? Did I hit? Mm-hmm. Roll die, look at DM. Did I hit? Because it's his job.
Because there's math.
Yeah, figuring out THACO is not the job of the player.
But isn't that similar to what Simborum does? But different?
Kind of.
It's totally the same. Completely different. Well, I mean, but no, because armor class zero. So armor class zero is THACO, but Simborum has 10 being the average, and so
you modify off that.
You modify plus or minus.
So it is similar, but not the same.
Right, but you haven't exactly explained exactly what THACO is, so I can't make the actual comparison. Because brain power doesn't happen with non-knowledge.
That's okay, Jamie, because I have you covered here. Here we go.
No, okay, leave me alone. Let me think. My brain needs all the processing power. All of it.
There you go.
It does need that.
Anyway.
When that happens, that's handicapped when people talk.
It does lower that ability.
Here's another rule system that people have thrown out, and I've done on occasion as well, especially for like level-based systems, is forget this starting on level 1 BS. Let's go ahead and start at level 3.
Amen. Nice. Yes. Which that's what Jamie has suggested that she's going to do when she runs her one-shot.
Mm-hmm.
Because the system or what she's playing isn't going to work for a level 1.
I mean, it'll work for me. It's not going to be great for you guys. I'm not looking for a TPK.
Yeah, we don't want that.
We don't know. She might be that kind of game master.
Really?
Maybe.
Is she that diabolical?
Possibly.
She could
met me, right?
Yes. Yes, she is.
I don't know. I'm not going to lie. You doing something where we all die in the end would be pretty beautiful in its own way.
What Call of Cthulhu? What?
But it starts with a sanity of 5.
Yep. Everybody's either dead or insane or run off by the time the game's over.
And there's no gun, so my husband can't get a hold of them.
It's inside. It's inside me.
Okay, I'm going to tell this story only because I don't think it's ever going to come to fruition, even though we have talked about it. So Jeremiah and I play Traveler. We have before.
Correct.
We haven't. We aren't currently. But Jeremiah, this was a game that I played with Corey. Mm-hmm. And we did a scenario that...
The space monkey almost killed him.
Well, no. So we did this scenario...
The space monkey did almost kill him.
I don't know what you're talking about right now. Something else. Wait a minute.
Trump passed and got him.
Okay, so we found this ship, okay? And a bunch of bad stuff happened on the ship. Spoiler alert. I'd love to tell you what we're playing so that you know what the spoiler alert's for, but I can't. But anyway, so it was one of these things where we found this ship, a bunch of bad things had happened on this ship, and we've got to figure it all out. And I'm not going to lie. We spent, after we played this, me and Jeremiah spent a decent amount of time trying to figure out how to set up the scenario for the ship where everybody had died. Because we were going to run Scott through it.
wait, what?
So to summarize, they found the event horizon.
Oh, yeah.
And
great.
A bunch of bad stuff happened.
Yep.
And they figured out, and they got away from the thing before the bad stuff happened to them. But they wanted me to create an adventure for you to play in a campaign, which they would happily and gleefully play as other characters.
Yeah.
Knowing that they're all doomed.
Yeah.
So you all wanted to create a scenario that Jeremiah would run.
Yeah.
That everybody in the party, except for me, would realize that there's no way to win, that you're all just fucked.
You're all doomed.
Yeah. Yeah. We wanted it so bad. Me and Corey.
Because you wanted to see what I would do.
Yes. Yes. They wanted you to experience this doomed scenario.
Because they wanted to see me run around like a rat in a maze trying to save us from this situation that they've already given up on because they know there's no point.
Well, they're
going
to go through the actions
to encourage you. No. They would do whatever I said, yes, but they wouldn't actually contribute any solutions.
Oh, yeah, we would because it's no win.
But you know there's no win, so there's no reason for you to commit as... I see how it is.
So
yeah.
The plan was the final scene after everything happens is that all of a sudden we all stop and they pulled out their other characters and we redo the last scene of their previous adventure where they're all fleeing for their lives and they get away.
It was gonna be beautiful.
Why do you all hate me? Why do you hate me? I'm just saying.
Hey, we didn't do it and I just totally throwed it off. Words? I ruined it.
You did not. You did not. It was awesome.
I know, because I really think we can still trick you into it.
You most certainly can.
He's going to go into every new game system thinking he's being set up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is rigged against me now. I get it. I see how it is. Hey, Scott, you want to play this game? What's wrong? What are you plotting?
You can totally win, man. You can totally win.
He's going to activate the self-destruct right off the bat.
Why not tell that story? It felt relevant at the time.
I'm not real sure, but it was entertaining.
It's all right. It's all good.
It felt relevant. Was it relevant?
I love it.
Not particularly.
It could have been.
It's all good.
Is everybody having fun?
Always.
What are we talking about?
Exactly.
Rules or games that we threw out.
There's some games you should just throw out.
You're not wrong.
What's
there
that
are.
One? Aeons in Legacy. Don't play it. Just throw it away.
Wow. That's a hot take.
Yep.
It was not fun.
It was not fun. We cheated and still couldn't win.
Yeah. 8 games in.
And, I mean, we cheated a lot. I still think we did it wrong.
You cheated a lot and still lost. Either that's a really hard game or you cheated wrong.
I know. I feel like we didn't do things right, but we reread the rules. We're not dumb people. I mean, I might not be able to read the rules right now and know what they say, but, like, in normal life, we're smart people.
Well, and it was a legacy game, and we toughed it out for 8 plays, and we figured out that no matter whether you win or lose the scenario, the story doesn't matter. It continues on.
And that was frustrating, but we went back. I mean, like,
It's a deck-building game.
Yes, so there's a deck-building game, and there is a way to exchange cards, right? We just blatantly threw that away and just did what we wanted. We tried to optimize the cards that we can pull from every game. We said, screw this shit. We're going to look at everything available and pick what we think is going to be best based on what we have experienced thus far, and still couldn't win the next scenario.
We lost on round.
It was bad.
We do not care for that game, in case you couldn't tell.
Alrighty. I think
so. Throw it away.
Throw it away. Throw the whole game out. Throw out the baby with the bathwater. Got it.
Yep.
I don't understand that thing. Why do people say that? I like babies.
Well, yeah. That's why people don't want you to throw them out with the bathwater.
They're really cute and they make funny noises.
Yeah.
Other things we throw out with RPGs.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any more?
I don't know. Are there?
What do you got for us, Houston?
I'm trying to think what else.
Well, really, isn't it just scenario to scenario and just what works and doesn't work? I mean, I'm getting it now. As I try to plan more, I'm really starting to understand. I mean, I've only done 2 Simborum games as Game Master, but as I plan the next part, I'm really starting to understand what you all say as I read through things, and it's like, okay, it's our world. We just got to do what's fun for us,
mm-hmm.
what we like.
Ooh, another good one is, you made me think of this.
Thank you.
Some games like Birthright and D&D had a battle system for units to fight units.
What's a unit in this particular scenario? Like an army? Like
infantry,
more than one person?
Cavalry, yeah. It had rules for that, and we tried it, but it really slowed down play. We didn't want to have a battle simulator. We like to keep the heroes be the center focus of a battle and just have the battle going on around them as a backdrop or setting.
So, I know you didn't say this, but so as an example, though, and this is the only example my brain can think of, you're talking like in Star Wars when you have the battle droids and they're fighting the Gungans in whatever the hell episode that happened in.
Yeah, nobody cares what's happening there.
But that's the type of scenario you're discussing.
Correct.
Right.
Or think about the Battle of Helm's Deep, right?
Okay.
You're playing Aragorn.
Well, who's that one? I've done forgot.
Oh my goodness.
I don't. I'm sorry.
It's Strider.
It's Strider. The one who threw the dwarf.
I know him.
So, if I called him Gimli, she'd be like, who?
No, I know who Gimli is. That's the dwarf.
Yeah, no, I just told you.
I knew that before you told me.
Okay.
You can't prove I didn't.
So Battle of Helm's Deep, you're going to follow Aragorn and his action running around doing what he's doing, right? You don't care what's happening throughout the rest of the battle. But when you're playing with those cards, you'd be playing the whole battle out plus your character.
That's a lot.
Yes. Some people love that. We didn't care for it.
But I could see where some people would love that. And again, that's going to be based on the story and based on the setting and based on the people playing it. I need to put my feet up. I'm tired. What's happening?
Are you my mom?
What? Am I your mom? I'm not. I'm your best friend. Am I your... What did you say?
Keep going.
Okay.
So that's another rule system that we've thrown out for some games. Or games that had sub-games in it.
But sometimes that can be fun. Birthright is one that I think is interesting. But it's just so involved.
Mm-hmm.
There's
like you have the domain actions that you have to keep track of between the character actions.
Right, but there's parts of it that are really just, it's intriguing to see this big system. It's very intriguing to think that you're in control of a whole kingdom and these different parts.
Well, that was the goal in older D&D.
Yep. You would eventually retire to your estate and your lands and
your keep,
your castle.
Yep.
And I can see why some people would like that, but I can see why that's too much. And I think that's the big thing about role-playing games, right? I mean, role-playing games, you know, it's all about what's fun for us, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't like realistic things when I read, and I don't like realistic things when I play.
Well, it's escapism.
It's escapism. And for my escapism, I don't want a lot of realism. I don't want it to mirror the real life. And I'm sorry, RuneQuest, but the realism for RuneQuest sometimes just kills me because it's like, man, I get enough of that in real life. I don't need it. I don't need it. I like fantasy. I want to be the absolute biggest, baddest, badass, and I want to kick ass, and I want to fight, and I want to win, and I want it to be epic, and I want it to be awesome, and I don't want to have to surrender because I'm actually mortal and going to die.
And I get a crit and whack you in the head, you're dead.
No, you can't do that because I am awesome. I counter that. I declare my dodge against you.
That's right.
So that brings up something to me that kind of upsets me with some of the more modern versions of games.
Okay.
Whereas, like, with, you know, like, games that the game master has, like, like the heroes have, like, a hero token, right, that they can use to do extraordinary things.
Yep.
There's some that are out there where the game master has, like, threat tokens and stuff that they can turn in to make things worse for the heroes.
Yes.
That upsets me. I'm the game master.
I'm going to have fun with Cypher.
I'm the game master. I can do whatever I want. I don't need a damn token. Now, if I'm abusing, if I'm abusing that, you know, and I'm just making the game harder for the characters for no apparent reason, I get that. You know, that's dumb. I shouldn't be, but the people who are game masters should not have to be held by a mechanic.
See, the fate system does that with fate points, but the players do it to themselves. Because anytime the player introduces a complication or a hiccup in what they're trying to do,
they can
earn a fate point to help themselves on something else later.
Yeah, they can use a fate point to help themselves, but what I'm saying is, in games where the game master has a threat token or threat points or hazard points or anything that allows the game master to spend that, you know, to add complications, I throw that out. I don't keep track of any tokens I have.
Well, and that goes hand in hand with some games, the bad guys can do everything the heroes can do, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of times they don't. Like, okay, Marvel superheroes, the bad guys have karma.
Yeah.
It's been karma to actually succeed.
Yeah. But we never do it.
I never do that because the heroes have the advantage. They're the ones doing the heroic actions.
Yeah, I agree. Like the mechanic, the boon mechanic for the players should not exist for the game master.
So that's similar to like Simbarum, where it averages.
I kind of like hits that.
And damage and stuff from the bad. You don't roll it. It's an average based on what they're able to do. And it doesn't. But Scott, I am going to say, I see where you're coming from. I don't necessarily disagree with you, but I think that I think the only reason to ever use that is for added drama.
Well, it's like Savage Worlds. It's, I'm not a fan of Savage Worlds. And you can do that with the bennies and tokens in Savage Worlds.
Right, but don't you think, don't you think just like in certain situations, the drama of doing that adds to it? See, because as a game master, a good game master does it, you never even notice.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, and that's the thing. So, like, I get what you're saying. So, like, if I want to add drama, right, I should never as a game master go, hey, this will be a great opportunity, like, we're at the climax, they're in the middle of the heist and they're everything's going great. This will be a great time to add a complication. Oh no, I don't have a threat Benny to spend. Oh my god, if I only had a threat Benny. No, I'm the game master. I can just add that complication. I can just tell that story. I don't need that mechanic.
For some reason, as you talk about it, the only situation that I think of it in is actual... Oh my god, my brain has stopped working.
It happens.
Cthulhu. So sorry. Yeah. It came back. I thought of it. Cthulhu is like where I can see it being the added drama.
Yeah.
To be like, dun, dun, dun. I place this Benny and do this to you. You know, because then it feels more still story driven.
Yeah.
More.
Yeah, but in Call of Cthulhu, they put that in the player's hands because, you know, I have sanity that helps create tension because you have a resource that goes away. And if you're using the luck rules, you have luck you can use, which makes it awesome the first couple times you do it, but it quickly runs out. Hmm. So you create this tension because you're getting rid of your safety blankets as you play.
Oh.
Until things go bad. And when they go bad...
They go bad quickly.
That's when your player knowingly runs back to the lynch mob because that's the safer of the two choices.
Yeah, don't drink the blue liquid.
No, you absolutely should drink the blue
liquid. I'd rather be hung.
Yep. I'd rather be hung too.
But it was inside.
It was inside.
But those are different mechanics, like you said, you can use to create tension or heighten the situation.
And drama. And it still should be story driven, and it should be something to where it adds flavor that is enjoyable by the party. Yes,
I just think the game mechanics should only be adding to player agency, not to game master agency, because game masters have ultimate agency.
Yeah, but there's a trust and a contract between players and game masters.
There is.
That everything's going to be handled responsibly.
Yes.
And not abused.
Yes, yeah. And that's the thing. If you have a game master that's abusing their game master agency, then, well, they don't need to be a game master.
And I've played in several of those in the past with people. So
yes, and the players and should just not play those.
I didn't go back to.
Yes, exactly. And exactly, that's the thing. Once again, if you have a game master who is just abusing his power as game master, just don't play in his games.
Yeah,
that's just the simple thing. Like I don't need a mechanic that keeps the game master honest.
Right. You shouldn't need that.
Exactly. You should not need that, in my opinion.
Well, in some of the best adventures I've ever played in, my character died.
And that, again, you've talked about that, and it's to just say it sounds hard and sounds awful, but as you've explained, like, the things that happened and how it happened, it was done so beautifully and done in such a way...
That when it came time to happen, everybody got done playing, like, man, that was awesome.
Right.
Even though I died.
But, you know, I think this is a totally different subject. But, you know, I think sometimes it's perspective, and sometimes you need outside perspective in order to really see the beauty of some of the games and how it works. And when you're new to stuff, and I will give you an example. Have I already talked about this? I don't remember anymore. We'll talk about it. You can tell me if I've already said it. Playing RuneQuest, I had trouble. I play with a group, not my husband. I play with a different group, and the game masters differently than Jeremiah. And while I have always had fun with each and every game, some of the games, when we were done, I would feel frustrated, or I would feel angry. I'd feel an emotion. Pick an emotion that isn't happy. Not that emotion. Any of the others. But Jeremiah often was listening to them as I played, and he would be like, and we would talk about it, and he would tell me what happened from his perspective. And it was so different from what I had experienced as a player, but it opened my mind to what had happened. And I was able to see it from the game master's...
Other than just feeling frustrated or angry.
Right. I was able to see it. And that happened a couple of times. And it has really helped me to enjoy. And since the first two or three times when I felt either frustrated or whatever, and again, not that I didn't have enjoy myself, but just still kind of wasn't as, what's the word? Enjoyable, not enjoyable, but satisfying. That's right. The word. Completely satisfying as maybe what I'm used to type of game. Hearing it from his perspective.
Yeah, you got one of the coolest scenes that he orchestrated.
I know, but I didn't feel that as a player playing it. But it wasn't until you retold it that I could appreciate it from that outside storytelling point of view to understand, oh my gosh, yeah, if you're retelling this story, it's absolutely awesome.
It would make a great scene in the movie.
And it's a great, it would. I dropped my sword. And it was bad.
And she had to make a split-second decision on whether to retreat and be safe with her companions or to attempt to go for the sword.
And the sword was blessed by my god, which gave me extra... damage.
Yeah, but in that situation, how do you choose retreat? You don't. You go for the sword.
She went for the sword, and she clobbered for it and almost died.
Yeah,
almost died. But it was one of those things, as a player, I was frustrated because my dice were working against me. Right? I wasn't rolling well. I wasn't doing what I felt like my character should be able to do. But as, again, once he retold it from a different...
But you dropped the blade because you had murdered so many people and the blood was everywhere, you couldn't hold on to the blade.
And see, it's hard to see that as a player playing who's just pissed off because your dice ain't doing what you want them to do.
He gave you an impossible choice.
And it was epic. And as you retold it and everything, I'm like, okay, I was just wanting to be godlike, and I'm not, and you're right. And it was epic. But it helped me to appreciate... my character and the story and things that we've done.
I think the whole point of that is that then what we're talking about getting rid of the rules is you keep the rules, like we said earlier, that makes the game fun. And you don't use or you cut out the rules that take away from that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And sometimes maybe if you are frustrated, you talk to your GM so that you can get it from a different perspective. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that you can see that what happened is actually epically awesome.
Or not.
Or not.
Anyway, so we are reaching the end of our time limit. So just so you know, we can close out here. To recap some of the kind of base rules that we tend to standardize throw out for games, of course. Movement rules, which it depends on how you're playing, is whether you can use them or not, and depending on which kind. But movement rules seem to be at the top of what gets kind of thrown out. Encumbrance rules, which encumbrance and what was the other one that went hand in hand with encumbrance?
Rations.
Yeah,
rations, spell Thank components.
Fuse, yeah. Anything that gets minutia, or it gets the game bogged down in minutia. Obviously can get kind of thrown out. But going around the horn, does anyone have any final thoughts on RPG rules that we kind of throw out? Houston, we're going to start with you for your final thoughts.
No, I have no final thoughts.
Houston has nothing. He is good. Everything has been said. Boom. Done. Mic drop. Right? Okay. Sure. Jamie B., what do you got?
We need a sound effect for the mic drop.
We do need a sound effect for the mic drop. I will work on that.
No, I am just thankful that the three GMs on this call that have run me through... No, four GMs. I can't count. That have run me through games, have not made me keep track of what my stuff weighs, are not strict with me on spell components, and can pretty easily convince you if I can get somewhere or not within X of many steps.
Oh, always a good thing to have a decent... description of spatial awareness, I guess.
Yeah, I am very thankful for the spell components, though, because I'm still iffy on that when it comes to you guys on how strict you are. Like, Houston, not that strict. So far, Jeremiah wasn't really that strict in the last campaign. I think there was a couple things I was like, are you going to allow this?
there's a couple items. Like I said, the Diamond Dust for Stone Skin is one that I kind of hear to, and the ones that are rare are hard to get. Where did you get those?
Well, that was why I asked you first. I'm like, is it feasible that I could do this?
Well, yeah. I'm typically fine with that because I don't want to derail the game. Everybody wants to have fun. So.
Yeah, yeah. That's all for me. Go ahead.
Cool. Jeremiah, final thoughts.
There's probably a few other smaller rules we've tossed out here or there that we didn't like or things didn't go well for us, but I think we hit the big ones.
Yeah, yeah, the big ones, I think, yeah.
But what I said earlier, the key to it is use the rules that make the game enjoyable and fun for you.
And that's the
what's
big
thing. What's our tagline?
Well, we'll get to that. Yeah, when I get to that. I don't want to say it twice. That's the thing.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't want to say it twice. Jamie E., what do you got?
I have failed to pull up a song. But just so because I couldn't find it and I wasn't doing it fast enough. But I was going to play ABC, Michael Jackson's ABC 123 in honor of all those stupid-ass acronyms that you all were throwing out earlier that I didn't understand what the freak they meant.
Here, Jamie, here's a song for Scott.
Okay, thanks.
That's the sound of Skype.
Yeah, I don't hear a song.
No, I don't either.
I hear a boing, whip.
Oh, it's the Rubik's Cube song. Because
all the blooping.
Oh, that's an ad. Skip ad.
Skip the ads. Are we there?
Let's not leave the awkward silence because he's going to cut it out.
I'm going to truncate silence on this. So
no truncating silence.
Oh, I'm going to truncate the silence.
All the talking.
You're playing a Rubik's Cube video. Okay, it doesn't make sense. No one heard the Rubik's Cube conversation.
Nope, yeah, it was all in your head.
I don't know what's going on. I mean, I've got my cube here. I can just hold it up to the mic and start flipping sides, if you want. Good.
All right, Scott. So, what's your final feedback or thoughts?
No, I mean, my final feedback and thoughts is pretty much what we've already covered. I agree. It's anything right now. First and foremost at the top, anything that causes the game to get bogged down in details, right? Anything that just bogs down the flow of a game, yeah, just gloss over it. It doesn't matter. Your ultimate goal is telling a story and making your players have a good experience.
Yes, make them have fun.
Make them have fun.
Make them have fun, yes.
Don't be a fun suck.
Yes.
You must have fun.
You must. If your players leave the table and they have not had a good time and they are not laughing, then you should go commit Harry Carey or Hari Kari.
Or having emotions in general, not just laughing, because sometimes there's probably crying.
Okay, I can agree with that. Maybe if there's enjoyable crying, I don't know how there's enjoyable crying, but if there is, then you still succeeded.
I had enjoyable crying earlier. That was when I was laughing so hard I was crying.
Okay. That works.
That was when you were talking about World War II. It was so funny.
You used all those made-up words and acronyms.
I did. I
don't have a PSA for this one. I'm sorry.
World War II is not funny. I'm talking about stuff.
House Rules does not condone the use of unknown acronyms.
She thinks you just threw a whole bunch of random letters and numbers together.
STBCA.
I was talking about the M1 Garand firing the 30-06 round, okay?
Yep, utter gibberish.
Yep. And your broker again.
I did. Completely and utterly. Wow. I think that's a good place for us to stop, so... Anyway, thank you all for joining us. You can find us on Twitter at House Ruling and Facebook at House Rules Podcast. You have been listening to House Rules, a proud member of the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast network, which you can find on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TN2MPodNet. And please be sure to check us out and like our other great podcasts. Until next time, remember, it's your house. It's your rules.